You are listening to the Post-Atomic Horror Podcast with Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham.
Hello, friends. We are in our usual between seasons place where we answer your mail, talk about assorted things, and just hang out.
Remember old times and how fun they was.
Yeah, and Bob's here with us this time to help us with the mail and such, so...
Hello, friends.
Hi,
friend,
Bob.
Friends.
Very nice. So yeah, season three, you guys.
Yeah, we made it.
We did. That was great.
Every day we get closer and closer to DS9.
Yep. And at the same time, we get closer and closer to Voyager.
Oh, man, why would you say that to me?
I don't
now
know.
I feel sad.
Because sometimes the tankard of prune juice is half empty, Matt. That's why. Gonna say blood wine instead. I went with prune juice,
and I stand by that choice.
Sure, why not?
I'm trying to figure out whether you made that prune juice reference because of Worf or because of Catherine, what's her head, being old.
Because of my incontinence is why I made it.
I was looking at my inability to poop, and
no, I don't really think of Janeway as old exactly. I just don't like her.
No, in my head she sounds old, but she's not like.
No, she's about the right age that a captain would be, like 40-ish.
She sounds like Katharine Hepburn in my head.
Yes. But, I mean, she's younger than, like, Picard ever was.
Yeah, and she's older than Kirk, but Kirk was, like, the youngest captain ever, so.
Mm-hmm.
No, she's, to me, the right age for a captain. I just don't like her.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
But we'll get there when we get there. First, we have, you know, like I said, let's for a moment, talk.
Let's talk about good things.
Yeah. And, Bob, you were, you know, you were, I might not be following along week to week, like, watching the episodes, so you may not have.
Of course I am.
I'm a loyal listener.
Yes.
Well, you watched the one that you showed up for. That's the important thing. No, you might be a little left out in this part is all, because it's all fresh in our minds. And
oh, no, not at all. I watched the entire series last year with my kids, so
it's good.
Relatively fresh.
Well, excellent.
Now, what did your kids think? Your kids are, what, like 16-ish and, like, 8? I don't know. I'm guessing. I don't know how old
15 and 13.
Right there now. You go.
What are they, 42 and 18?
Yeah, that's about right. No, I know one of them's in his teens and one of them is, like, not quite there yet, right?
Yeah.
Or at least last year when you watched them.
Yes, exactly. But they loved it. They loved it. I think my son started watching it just because it was, you know, kid and dad time. But he really got into it. And Moira was, she actually... was really, at least the explanation she gave, she was really attached to the original series and didn't want to watch Next Gen. And even though she had only seen the movies and never had watched the original series at all. But then she, I think we pulled her in for, I don't know, Measure of a Man or something, something halfway through, you know, second or third season. And she got hooked and she fell in love with Data and then she caught up and we all watched it together.
Awesome. Well, the girls do love Data.
People.
Well, I don't know, Matt. You and I, through seasons one and two, were very much like, this is okay, but where's Spock?
No, but Measure of a Man will pull you in.
No, there were a handful in season two that start getting there.
Mm-hmm.
There's Measure of a Man, there's Q-Who, there's one or two others that I can't think of off the top of my head. The Worf one with Kalar, that one was good.
The Worf show starring Worf.
Yes. Co-starring Kalar.
Season one and two are pretty rough going.
Yeah, and Bob, you wanted to talk about, I know you don't have it yet, but I guess you're getting the Blu-ray set, which is out like now.
Yes, it's coming tomorrow.
Very nice.
Nice.
By the time this airs, you will have had time to watch them all. You probably won't watch all 26 all at once, I imagine.
Yeah. Well, probably not, because we got Otakon this weekend and dressing up as anime characters and all that.
But, cool.
You gotta switch nerd gears a little bit.
Exactly. Yeah, we were watching DS9 and then we broke away and we've been watching Full Metal Alchemist for the last couple of weeks, so... We'll get back on that after the convention.
Right. But yeah, by the time this goes out, that set will be available. Do they have a date for the next season yet?
I don't think they do. I haven't seen it at least.
I demand they all be out now.
Well, yeah,
it seemed like they were going to be like every 4 or 5 months or something. They were going to put out another, set.
It's going to take forever. No, I was just really hoping, like I'd heard that the season two set in particular, apparently there's like, I don't know, half an hour of footage or something like that from Measure of a Man that they're going to either restore or offer as a bonus or something like that.
That is really, really cool.
And I have a link to that, which I'll share, and I don't know how reliable it is, but,
I hadn't heard that, actually.
The headline they went with was something awful like Uncut Man or something, you know, something really filthy, which is just funny.
Uncut Man Measured.
Yeah, something along those lines.
Measure twice, cut once.
No, it was way filthier than that. That was clever, but it wasn't filthy.
Oh.
No, but apparently there's all kinds of footage from that episode, and I don't know if they're doing that with others. I've only watched the stuff on the sampler disc, and those were gorgeous.
Oh,
I'm,
yeah.
I'm not usually a Blu-ray guy. Bob, I know you are, and you know, you see that, you know, you're really into the finer points and how everything looks. And
well, it's more than just that I've, like, worked with HD video for a living, and it's mm-hmm. I've just been trained so that I can't stand standard def anymore.
Right.
It's not even something I, you know, necessarily wanted to get into. It's just I can't stand it.
Well, that's rough, dude.
But Matt, you came over and watched Farpoint with me, and you could definitely see the difference.
Oh, you could totally see the difference. I felt utterly jealous from then on.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, and when I got the opportunity this season actually to watch what was the second one?
Code of Honor?
Sins of the Father.
Sins of the Father, yeah.
That was fantastic. And there wasn't, like, apart from the Klingon homeworld, there wasn't a ton of, like, effects shots.
Mm-hmm.
It was just seeing the guys on the bridge, seeing the crisp colors of the uniforms, and just the lights were brighter, and just everything was just popped way more. It was way better.
Well, even in Encounter of Farpoint, it felt like it was, like, super bright on mm-hmm. the DVDs, and they kind of toned things down a little bit and made it a little more filmic. In the way they colored it.
Well, it felt a little brighter for me for Sins of the Father, but it might be because I'm watching ripped from DVD copies that I ripped from my DVDs a while back, and it's possible those were, I don't know, encoded murky or something, and maybe...
Oh, no. Yeah, they're horrible to begin with. I've looked at the original DVDs and
God,
looking
the disdain there, Jesus.
Well, they were bad for their time, even.
Yeah.
They were like, they were edited on analog videotape. Mm-hmm. And, they never, did a remaster or anything of it until now, doing all the HD stuff. So it was just, everything looked like it was, fourth generation videotape.
Right. Isn't that the reason it took so long for them to do the Blu-rays of it?
Yeah, they had to go back to the original film and add the effects again or something like that?
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Most of the stuff they shot, all the live action that they shot was on film, and they actually shot, a lot of the effects stuff on film as well with, the shots of the Enterprise and even some of the planet stuff.
Yeah, but you have to go back and re-edit that stuff in, right?
Right, but they had to recompose everything so that, the planet and the Enterprise and the stars and mm-hmm. putting all that together into one frame.
Magic
that was
stuff
that they had done
over.
On video the first time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Jesus.
And, of course, they taped over most of the episodes with shitty old episodes of Doctor Who.
Well, the Gavs would be happy to hear that. No, I've said this all along, probably to the point where everyone's sick of me saying it, but really, season 3 is where this show gets great.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when it gets great? Oh, good.
Well, come on, look back. Look at all the great episodes.
It's been a fantastic season.
That pair of Romulan episodes, mm-hmm. and Sarek, and Yesterday's Enterprise, and The Offspring, and then mm-hmm. that fucking cliffhanger at the end. Jesus Christ.
Yep. Oh, my God, I love that episode.
As we record this, we're recording a bit ahead of time, because I'm going on vacation next week, and I just finished watching Best of Both Worlds today, and it is a real challenge to write comedy about something that has nothing funny in it and just has you with your jaw on the floor the whole time.
Yep.
It's not easy.
And you had to do Sarek last week, too, so Jesus.
Yeah, but, there were some jokes here and there. I mean, come on. People yelling at Wesley for being a loser, that was easy. There's nothing funny about Best of Both Worlds.
And Best of Both Worlds, I think, was actually the first episode of Next Gen that I saw. Mm-hmm. And I think it was at your house, Al.
Possibly. I'm not sure. We just started hanging out when the show was just starting to get big, and I keep remembering it slightly differently, and I know this was around the time I started watching, but I don't specifically remember which episode it was. I know you had you had a tape of an episode from season 4 that you loaned me, but that's all I can remember. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
Huh.
But it was around that period that I think most people started getting into it.
Mm.
Was in that season 3, early season 4 era where the show really started to pick up and show what it could do. And we all started saying, hey, this looks pretty cool.
This might actually be as good as that other thing I used to like.
Oh, I was... See, that's the thing. I was into the movies. I was kind of like his daughter, actually. I was into the movies, but I never really seen the series. So.
Ah.
Mm. So, anyway, we have some mail here. Unless
we do.
Is there any further business? I just wanted to kind of wrap up season 3 and say that was great. And
it was great.
I don't think there's really much more to say.
Here's the 3 more years?
4 more years.
4 more years. 4 more years!
I'd like to think it was only 3 because I'm not a fan of season 7, but we'll get there.
Here's the 4 more appearances of Ray Wise.
Have you seen my Laura?
Won't someone please dance with me?
Why is he dancing with her photo?
All right. So.
Coming up next, the Twin Peaks podcast.
I am not. I'm going to put the bucket over my head when James Hurley goes to that other town. All right. Let's read some mail here. We got one from Kim who says, "Dear Al, and not really Matt."
Oh, man.
So I assume she also means not really Bob.
Oh.
But we'll open this up to all three of us. Can you please say something in a Worf voice? Make it sexy. So, I don't know. I'm going to go with my standard,
"We know a remote farm in Lincolnshire where Mrs. Buckley lives. Every July, peas grow there."
You guys want to take a crack at it?
I will say,
"How are you doing, Sponge Muffin?"
All right, then. Matt, you want to?
What is that kid's name? I know him from somewhere.
God, what is his name?
Who are you?
Bob, I don't know if you heard the one we just posted like yesterday. Probably not yet.
Yes.
Oh, okay. We just can't get over that Worf doesn't know Wesley's name. All right. Next one comes from Jackson, and he says, "Dear Pa people." I see what he did there. If you were making Star Trek The Next Generation, the animated series.
Oh, I get it now.
Ah. Pa people got no reason to live. If you were making Star Trek The Next Generation, the animated series, that's a lot of colons, and could only afford to cast 6 of the 7 cast members, who would you cut out and what wacky Erex or Emres-esque alien, Emres-esque, that's tough, would you replace them with? Yours in Flonk, Jackson. All right, first of all, don't give Flonk that much power. Flonk does not equal Christ. We do not want him thinking that.
No, no.
One of you guys want to take this first, or...
Well, I would cut out Dr. Crusher and replace her with Erics, because I'm sure he's gotten his medical degree by now.
Right, he must have.
And he's,
he a doctor?
You know, he's got the 3 arms, and that could really come in handy during surgeries.
But he was Chekhov. I was about to say he was a Chekhov. He sat in the Chekhov seat. He wasn't a doctor.
Yeah, but Chekhov was like suddenly head of security, so why not?
That's fair. Well, plus
we could add more Dabo girls.
Well, always need more Dabo girls.
Scalpel, obey me.
I would say Wesley, and apart from the obvious joke answer, I would actually love to see an alien character in the junior ensign role.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, Nog was great in DS9 when they made him, like, a Starfleet cadet. I like the idea that he's, you know, the only one of his kind.
Yeah. I always would like them to explore the idea of, like, a Ferengi and Starfleet.
Well, Ferengi or any, you know, anything, like, along those lines. But, I mean, Worf kind of fills that, but they never really explore that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've been at peace for so long, you don't really get the fish out of water thing.
Or we could finally get the devil in the dark as the, you know, the...
Oh, the Horda, I can remember, yeah.
The Horda, thank you.
Well, they had that in novels, so yeah, if they could pull that off in an animated series, that'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
The novels do all kinds of great stuff. Like, some of the better novels have, like, a full range of aliens that they could never pull off visually in the show.
The Horda crew member,
There was, there was like a spider guy.
Mm-hmm. There's a,
oh, the like Titan, a glass spider. Right?
Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
The Titan books are all about, like, the entire crew is made up of aliens.
Oh, neat.
It's got like almost no humans.
Except Riker and Troy.
Yep.
I'd also,
how does the Horda breathe on a regular ship? Don't they like breathe rock?
No, they breathe cake. No, I don't know, actually. Is that what they said in the episode?
I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out how that would work.
Sure, they eat rock, they breathe rock, they excrete rock.
Don't you breathe rock?
I think Ted Nugent breathes rock. Oh, and I would also replace Troy with a brick wall.
Yep.
Oh.
I would love to hear you defend Counselor Troy, Bob.
No, I suppose the brick wall would be more useful.
All right, then. Believe me.
I would also replace Troy, and I would replace her with... I would have an invisible Q that only Picard can see floating around and annoying him.
So the Great Gazoo.
Yes, basically.
The Great Gazoo.
except that he would be Q, painted green and wearing a space helmet.
But he'd still call him Dum Dum, right?
Going back to Rise of 3, eh, Dum Dum?
That is perfect. You've hit the nail right on the head there.
You're going to have that little twinkle toe sound effect, though.
Well, yeah, exactly. I'll drop that in because I actually have some Hanna-Barbera sound effects here.
We might as well get used to them, then.
Yeah, exactly. Next question comes actually via Twitter from Mark Butterworth, I guess of the Syrup Butterworth people. And he says, have you ever played Star Trek Online? I have not. I heard that everyone that plays it is automatically a captain of a ship, and that just feels weird to me. Like,
yeah.
It seems like your typical MMO would be like, everyone has a skill. Like, somebody's a doctor, someone's a security guy, someone's an engineer. You know, that seems more realistic to me, but...
Amanda's talked about this, and she used to be a pretty frequent WoW player. Mm-hmm. Your average bridge crew is broken up pretty easily into a WoW party.
Yeah.
And instead they just decided to give everyone a ship, which doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Huh.
Well, no, that's that, and I don't play MMOs.
I was really excited for it when it was coming out, and then just reviews started coming in that were really bad, and I bailed.
Hmm.
Well, I believe it's free to play now.
Oh,
like all MMOs that aren't doing well.
So all MMOs that aren't Warcraft is what you.
Yeah, exactly.
Say. Right. No, I do remember because I walked the floor on PAX for a couple years, and I remember it was coming soon forever.
Yeah, it was coming soon for like 3 years.
Yeah. Mm. So I don't know if that usually that means there's a problem. I think.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know. I haven't played any RPGs since, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, like Phantasy Star Online on the Sega, whatever it was. What was it? Genesis? Not Genesis.
Saturn.
Genesis. Sega game.
The Saturn, wasn't it?
Sega. Genesis is planet forbidden.
Are you a Mexican alien now?
Yeah. Yes. Mexican alien.
Mexican alien and Mexican Scotty.
Genesis is planet forbidden.
You're going to get us in so much trouble. with the angry Mexicans that are listening to the show. Okay.
I'm sorry, Mexicans.
Yeah.
I know. It's all in fun.
Yes.
I'm sorry, Mexicans, the post-atomic horror.
We were talking to someone else.
I don't play RPGs, but I do like to put on my Starfleet uniform and say, make it so when I'm drunk. So.
Wait, I mean,
and also when you're sober.
Well, this is true.
I mean, who doesn't, really? I don't have one, but if I did, I would do that all the time. No, we were drunk on the bridge of the Enterprise D.
Oh, yeah.
You
that was
and I
pretty awesome.
And a couple of other people. That was.
That sounds fucking fantastic.
That was, I mean, we've talked about this before, the Star Trek experience in Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I wish my kids could have seen that.
Yeah, one of my great regrets is that I never got out to that.
We spent a bit of time there. We drank in Quarks, and then we went, and it was a pretty good recreation of the bridge. I'm sure there were nits to pick, but overall, it felt like you were on the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was, you know, everything I'd hoped it would be.
Yep.
And I was a little drunk, but apart from that, it was fantastic.
No, that was totally awesome.
Yeah.
They take you through and like somebody is a descendant of Captain Picard and
right,
that's why they're saving you from the past back to the future to the past again or something.
There's a shuttle involved and I don't know.
Oh my God. The transporter effect in that was fucking amazing. I still don't know how they did it. I mean, you're standing on this floor with a pattern on it and they like suddenly there's this, it goes totally black and there's a whoosh of air and the lights come back on and you are somewhere else.
Yep.
Wow.
It's like they totally like change the walls and the floor has a different pattern on it and there's like an officer in the transporter room in front of you. They're like, what the hell just happened?
I like that you say they changed. Like there's a bunch of stage hands running in and completely building the entire set.
They must have,
in that split second.
It's all by hand.
I assume they shot us through pneumatic tubes, which was the rush of air.
That was the whoosh of air.
Yeah. You know, like you're making a bank deposit in the drive-thru.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, Zoidberg's stuck again.
No, that was a lot of fun, and I wish we'd gotten some pictures is my only regret, because we were there, and I don't think I have a single picture of me actually on the bridge, which is a damn shame.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I think you had to pay extra for that.
That would have covered that would have been our cover art for years.
Well, there are pictures of very young me and Bob sitting in Kirk's chair.
Oh yeah.
That was at the Smithsonian, and they actually let you sit in it, which was great. We actually ended up using it for the stupid little movie we made in high school, which was nice. It was like an actual prop in a movie we made.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, I put on some sort of cloak with a hood and sat in the chair and made gestures for 20 seconds until people got really impatient.
And then we just kept looping that and dubbing dialogue over it, and all was good.
Yep.
Your ass sat in the same groove that Shatner's ass sat in.
Woo! Shatner's ass.
Our next question comes from Beav, and he says, hi, guys.
Hi.
In listening to 84's review of Deja Q, we learned that Counselor Troy apparently has a rider in her contract that says the ship's lounge will have no less than 10 chocolate sundaes at the ready for her at all times. My question for you is, what other riders do you think other members of the crew have for any ship assignments they take in their careers? Thanks, your pal Beav.
Hmm.
I think Picard's would be the most difficult because of his whole I'm into something new every week thing. I think the ship's stores are probably full of saddles and Shakespeare books and fedoras and riding crops.
He's like a five-year-old getting a new toy.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, I don't think the riding crops are for horses.
But. Now I want a saddle.
Well, now you've just made him into Nick.
Yes. Well, Jean-Luc, you just got your riding crop last week.
I don't care.
No, I don't like it anymore.
I don't like horses anymore. Now I'm an archaeologist.
Look, a pot.
No, plus they have replicators, so, you know, there is no ship store, so I just...
You can make as many pots as you want.
Yep, all the pots in the world.
I think Worf's writer must call for copious amounts of honor to be doled out on a regular basis. You know, guys for him to, you know... to stab and things like that.
Is that what honor is? I don't even know what honor looks like. Like, how do you make honor?
You can quantify it with a bucket of honor.
Oh. Yeah. Is that the unit of measure for honor? It comes in the bucket?
It comes in buckets.
Like KFC.
Yeah, exactly.
I think honor must, like, comes in the form of red M&Ms.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Only red M&Ms.
It brings us back to the rider thing, too, which is nice. No, but only the red M&Ms that they made after they were poison.
Yes.
Like, not the cancer M&Ms. There's no honor in those.
Warrior's candy.
Yes.
Melts in your mouth, not in your hand.
That was for you, Kim. What do you think, Matt?
I think Troy's actual rider is that every week I get to do something.
No, that was actually Beverly's, because I was reading about Best of Both Worlds, and the only reason she beams over to the Borg cube in one of the last acts is because Gates McFadden said, I'd really like to shoot a phaser. That looks fun.
That's adorable.
And so they invented an in-story reason. Okay, they need a doctor over there because Picard might be hurt. And it made sense. It wasn't contrived or anything.
Nice.
That's still hilarious.
But that's why she was on the away team for, like, the only time.
I get to come.
Whee! I finally get to be something other than a mom.
Yay.
So that was nice.
I get to be Picard's mom.
Yeah. Well, that just got weird. Why don't we answer another question?
Oh, boy.
This one comes from Richard. He wrote us that awesome song last time.
Ah, yes.
About Groppler Zorn. I'm very excited about your upcoming collaboration with the Drunken Time Travel Lads. I think to match their beer drinking, though, you and Matt should smoke opium or something. Or at least have the Enterprise visit the Hobbit planet so you can go for the sarcastic hat trick with the girls with glasses. Sorry for the sports reference. Are hobbits in sports?
I don't know.
I thought the only sport that hobbits played was competitive eating.
I couldn't tell you. Are they on, like, Hobbit versus food?
Was the opium the sports reference?
That may be. I'm honestly not sure. You know, we do love the girls. They are fantastic. But that's never going to happen. Our stance on the whole Hobbit issue is well established.
Yeah, we've talked about this.
I mean, for those of you who lean Tolkienward, you should check them out. The Girls with Glasses Talk Tolkien. We'll put a link in the show notes. They're great, and I am told that if you like Tolkien, they offer some great stuff. Mm. It's, you know, we're just not into those books, and we really don't want to talk about how we hate stuff, because we try to be positive here.
There's nothing worse than going on your friend's show and being all like, this sucks.
So this is what you're talking about, huh? We hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not cool. We wouldn't want someone doing that to us.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I rarely smoke illicit substances anymore.
Speak for yourself.
I rarely smoke illicit substances.
That's why
anymore.
I go in the closet, because Amanda can't stand all the smoke from the Mary Jane.
Yes, that's what it's called.
I roll it up and smoke it like a cigarette.
Do you keep it in a bowl on top of the refrigerator?
Yes!
That's where she can't get to it.
It's real sticky weed. No, we're actually discussing the Drunken Time Travel crossover with those guys as we speak.
Yeah, that will be happening, and we're very much looking forward to it.
Yeah, right now the only true crossover topic we have is the Doctor Who Star Trek comic, which is not finished for quite some time, and we're all keen to do it now.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. I don't know. We've talked about maybe doing two.
Yeah.
Like maybe one on our show and one on theirs, and we'll do one before the comic and then one after the comic. I don't know. We just like talking to those guys. That's all it really is.
You will definitely see us talk to those guys again.
Yeah, at least once, if not twice. Because that's a lot of fun. And
yeah.
My only concern there is, of the four of us, there's really only one person that knows both shows, and that's Irish Gav.
Yes.
You and I are not very well versed in our Doctor Who.
Especially not classic Who.
Yeah, and English
Gav. I know a little bit of
New Who.
New Who.
Yes.
New Who!
But English Gav doesn't even know what Star Trek is, so that might be a little difficult. But no, we love those guys. We got a chance to hang out with them in Emerald City, and we talked to them on Skype quite a bit, and they're great guys, and we're really looking forward to that.
And if you're not listening to it, and you should be because we mentioned it a lot, Drunken Time Travel is a fantastic podcast also.
It is. It's two guys from the UK reviewing Doctor Who from the beginning, which is a much more monumental undertaking than us because it goes back a bit further, and they're having to watch reconstructions of episodes that were taped over with episodes of Mama's Family or something. I was going to say
they'll
Maud.
Still be doing this long after Al and I have killed each other.
No, actually, Gav and I compared notes, and I think we have more shows to do.
Really?
But, well, more...
I guess that makes sense, because they have the extended, like, the...
Well, when they do the serials, sometimes they can be seven... I think they're doing one that's, like, 12 episodes now, mm-hmm. which is, like...
Holy cow.
I think they're breaking that one into two, but usually, if it's six or seven parts, they'll just do it as one show.
Yeah.
So there are more individual episodes for them.
Mm-hmm.
But as they group them together, there'll actually be fewer podcasts.
Huh.
So, in any case, both shows are going to be at this for a very long time. So
yes.
I'm looking forward to both of them.
Ah, well, thank you, Bob.
Don't expect the one where they do, Blackadder. What's a British TV show?
All the shows I watch, I don't know.
Yeah, that'll work.
QI? That would be a strange show to do.
The one where they review episodes of QI.
Yeah, exactly. Or Red Dwarf.
Yeah, sure.
You could do Red Dwarf. But no, we're definitely doing that. That should be a lot of fun. Speaking of comics,
mm-hmm.
Bob, I don't know if you've had a look at the IDW ongoing series or the Doctor Who crossover.
I read a few of the first ones. I have not seen the crossover.
I've been pretty impressed with the IDW series, but this most recent issue, Matt, have you read that one yet?
The Tribbles one?
Yes.
Yeah, it was really good.
That was the first truly great one that I read. The first few were they were retellings of classic episodes, and we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
But they twist differently based on the new continuity.
Mm-hmm.
But the Tribble story is a completely original one. Like, you think it's going to be a retelling of Trouble with Tribbles, and you're like, well, why bother?
Yeah, exactly. Well, the thing is that not only has Trek done it, but they basically redid it with DS9, too.
Right. No, this is entirely different. There are Tribbles, but there's a whole other thing, and it's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Matt, did you notice, and I won't spoil it, but did you notice the homage to the animated series in that?
I did. I absolutely did, and I loved it.
Yeah. It's whoever's doing that has a real respect for, like, all of Trek and not just, you know, their version of the original series, which is
great. No, that was completely awesome.
Yeah, and we will, again, provide a link to what that is, because we highly recommend it.
Yeah, I believe the second trade paperback was just released, so...
Yeah, they're up to 10 or 11 issues now, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the other thing I want to mention real quick was that Doctor Who crossover we've been talking about. I don't know how you feel, Matt, but I've not been terribly impressed with it so far.
No, the most recent issue was pretty good, but otherwise it's been a bit of a letdown, and I really don't care for the art.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the art. It's one of those, like, it's really nice, pretty painted art, but it doesn't work sequentially at all. Like, it doesn't look...
No, it's very clearly painted from, frozen... Like
stills?
The Paws DVD.
Right. But, I mean, it looks good. Like, it looks good as individual images, I think.
I suppose.
It's like Alex Ross. I don't think Alex Ross does sequential art very well. I think he makes beautiful art.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think it moves from panel to panel very well.
No, the real problem is in the third issue we have they do a crossover with the original series and Baker Doctor Who,
which is great. They have this build up where the 11th Doctor, the current Doctor, meets Picard and his guys, which is all right. But yeah, then they do a flashback to when Tom Baker met Kirk, and and that's done in a more cartoony style, and that's so much better.
Yeah,
and plus it's just more fun.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys just belong together. I don't know. Just that felt right.
My take on if you're going to do a Doctor Who Star Trek crossover, you really need to embrace the huge histories that both of those properties have.
Well, and they might be doing that. For all we know, they're going to do more.
I suppose that's true.
You know.
Like, my first thought is that IDW just wrapped a Star Trek Legion crossover that I actually really enjoyed.
Huh.
And it touched on, both of those properties, like, very extensive histories. I would love to see that take with Trek and Who.
Well, I know they recently expanded it from whatever the original run of issues is going to be, and it's going to be, what, like 10 or 12 now.
Mm.
So, I mean, maybe they're intending to do that and flesh it out with more, you know.
That would be very cool. I believe it's selling like nobody's business.
Well, I mean, really, as far as fan service goes,
mm-hmm.
I think you throw Benedict Cumberbatch in there and you got, you know.
Oh, my God, that would be awesome.
Maybe Robert Downey Jr. somehow.
Dear Marvel, we borrow Iron Man.
Yeah, and then you've basically won the internet.
You certainly won Tumblr, I know that much.
Yes, exactly. All right. Next one comes from Flonk, and he says, Flonk to Post-Atomic Horror. My girlfriend likes Dukat, and I don't mean in the there's a good actor playing an interesting character way. I mean she likes him. This is not the first time this has come up in my life. What does it say about the women I date that they're all attracted to Space Hitler? And more importantly, what does it say about me? Flonk out.
I remember having a discussion with Laura about Dukat.
Well, hang on.
Like, you realize he's awful, right?
Flunk doesn't have a girlfriend, man. I don't know why you brought Laura into this.
Oh, yes, of course. Excuse me.
Are we still pretending that? Sorry. Anyway. No, I hear you. I've had that conversation with her as well.
It's like, you don't understand. He's awful.
Yep. I mean, he's one of those.
I don't know. I think God is pretty odd.
Do you?
Well, I mean, power is sexy.
It can be.
Maybe it's just his neck things.
His neck bolts.
His neck bolts. Spines.
Yes. No, I think he's one of those villains that you love to hate.
Oh yeah, no, like, he's an awesome character.
Yeah, there were entire episodes devoted to him that I just adored, but
he's horrible.
I don't know about being attracted to him. I know Laura and also our friend Jesse. Actually, they're the aforementioned girls with glasses, and other people have really expressed a disdain for Kira, which just sort of baffles me because I love Kira. She's fantastic.
Was that the whole Kira ruins everything meme that's going around?
Yeah, they're taking Kate from Lost and turning her into Kira, and that's just not fair at all.
No,
I mean, first of all, Kira doesn't even climb trees.
I don't know. She does overreact sometimes.
Yeah, but
just because, like, you know, I'm a rebel still, and I need to prove that even though I'm in this position of, well, you know, being the man, I'm still a rebel.
She's worried about being a sellout. I like that.
There's a little bit of overacting there, but
no, I always like Kira.
They soften her over time too.
Yeah,
she starts out.
Also, she fills out that little uniform quite nicely.
Well, yes, she does.
Uh-huh.
Especially in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah, holy shit.
Which, Bob, I don't know if you've gotten to those yet. But,
no, not yet.
Oh, well, you let us know how that goes. But I will look forward to it.
Oh, you will. No, I don't know. I always saw her as just Ensign Ro. And if you've watched Next Gen and you know who Ensign Ro is, she's basically the same character.
Yeah.
And she overacted from time to time as well, but, you know. Kira had a nice arc where she gradually softened a little and then, you know.
Slowly filed away that chip on her shoulder.
Yes, exactly. Until, and I won't give this away, you know, for a while, but in the DS9, like in the last season, in the last part of the last season, she is completely come full circle and she's doing stuff you could never imagine season one.
Oh, yeah, no, that is so fucking cool. That is such a perfect arc for her.
God, I love that show. All right, moving on. Before we get too caught
up. We love DS9.
We need to stop doing that.
Yeah.
We need to stop thinking about our next thing and focus on our current thing. This one comes from Surreal, and he says, hello, all. After listening to the latest podcast on Sarek, I was reminded of my own brief encounter with Mark Lenard. Way back in 1990... I was helping with security at a small con here in town. I was stationed outside the dealer's room, making sure everyone had a badge to get in. At one point, I look over to see an older gentleman walking into the room without a visible badge. So I politely tell the gentleman that he needs a badge to get inside. Have you ever been stared down by an actor who plays a Vulcan? It is most impressive. I quickly stammered an apology to Mr. Lenard and let him pass through. Later that day, he told the most memorable Star Trek joke I have ever heard. How many Klingons does it take to screw in a light bulb? 2, but they have to be really small. It took me a minute for that one to sink in, then another minute to realize that Spock's dad actually made a joke about screwing. That's great. On another subject, I'm not sure this would get into the spoiler world. We're not that worried about spoilers on a 25-year-old show.
No.
But what was Starfleet thinking giving Picard command of so many ships? First he lost the Stargazer to some unknown force, then he loses the Enterprise D, and then he crashes the Enterprise E into a Romulan/Reman ship. And let's not even get started on how long a ship with the name Enterprise lasts. Okay, so the NX lasted long enough to become a museum. The original 1701 got a refit after maybe 10 or 15 years, and then it was destroyed. I don't know how long the A or B lasted. I read that the C was destroyed after only a few years, and the D made it 10 years. The E was smashed all to hell after only 3 to 5 years. I think Starfleet should pay closer attention to who they let command their flagships. This has been, as always, surreal.
I feel like they just should let Deanna drive.
Yeah, well, she, and you know, Marina Sirtis makes that joke a lot. I finally got to drive! She's adorable.
Like on a road.
Yes, she called it driving. I'm under the impression that other ships, the ones not called Enterprise, get destroyed even more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I bet the Intrepid is up to, like, L or M.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, we saw fucking tons of Constitution-class ships get wrecked in the original series.
Like, that shit happened every week.
Yeah, because after a while, like, yeah, another one. Okay, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But we're constantly running into planets where Starfleet ships crashed with a book or something.
Yep.
I mean, maybe starships are just disposable. Maybe you use them for a couple of years and throw them out.
If you're replicating them, then yeah, it's really not an issue anymore.
I don't think you can replicate a whole ship.
Well, you can replicate pieces and put them together.
Your parents.
Like
put them
Lego.
Together. Yes, exactly. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm just imagining.
Yes, a giant replicator. Why can't they have that?
I don't know. We've never seen one. That's why.
I'm imagining Starfleet has like a giant shredder that they use to recycle them. Or maybe they subcontracted out to the Doomsday Machine.
Oh, yeah. The space funnel.
Yeah.
Oh, crap. We got a nacelle jammed in here again. Hang on a sec.
The space cream co.
PC load letter. What the fuck does that mean? No, I think ships blow up all the time. I think that's the whole nature of exploring. I don't think it's, you know, I don't think it's that big of a deal, really. Mm-hmm. Plus, you know, if you think the ship's going to be safe every week, what's the point? Like, you need some stakes.
Yeah.
Steaks.
And this one comes from Irish Gav. I give you Mr. Ronald D. Moore on the importance of the Enterprise in the fictional universe. This is a quote from Ron Moore. I've always opposed the deification of the Enterprise, A, B, C, D in the original, as some sort of quasi-mystical ship. The Enterprise is special to us, the viewers, and we can view it as the most important ship, but extending that to the way it's treated in the series, any of the series, would be a mistake. It's confusing the audience's identification with the ship and the characters with the reality being created on screen. Yes, it's clearly famous, and yes, it's certainly a plum assignment. But if the Enterprise started being treated as the most important vessel in SF, then it would cease to get dangerous missions and would probably start being treated as more of a showboat than a real workhorse. You don't send the most important ship of the Federation out to do humdrum missions like patrol the border, cataloging out space, subspace readings, or any of the other many things we sent the Big E out to go do. Gav wants to know our thoughts and opinions on that. There's a separate question, but we'll get to that after this, I think. Mm-hmm. I always liked the Enterprise being acknowledged as like a legendary thing. That never bothered me.
I mean, I think the fact that people acknowledge it as having as being, you know, Kirk's ship.
Well, right, exactly. I think Kirk, there's a whole hero worship thing with Kirk, which I think is important. I like that.
Like I believe that Kirk and the crew of the Enterprise, they should be well acknowledged as like having a huge role in like that. Like they should all be seen as like huge Federation heroes.
Well, they saved Earth at least twice that I can think of in two of the movies, and they may have done so in the series, which I can't remember.
But. I would buy that, you know, after that, you know, let's face it, the people who, up until the D, no one who took the Enterprise after its first, you know, after the A really sort of lived up to that.
I don't know, Rachel Garrett, like, died for peace with the Klingons. That was a pretty big deal.
That's true, I guess.
I don't know what else she did, but that was.
But I mean, like, you know, one thing versus saving the universe, you know, at least once or twice.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, they saved the Earth.
I mean, I think there are ships that become legendary. I mean, even here in the military, ships are specific, you know, military groups or whatever, but it's sure. The best of the best sort of thing. Sure. But it's not so much about the ship itself. It's, you know, it's the people that are on that ship. They, you know, wherever they are, they go on to be revered because they were the best, not necessarily the most important.
See, I agree with that to a point, but let's take that from the military to astronauts. We look at the first guys out there as a big deal. We look at Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin and those guys as a big deal. But there is also a huge sort of fetishistic thing, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but with decommissioning the space shuttles, people are really into those ships.
Yeah.
And those,
yeah,
I suppose
I understand that.
They're really like, because one of them's coming here to the Boeing Museum, and I think one of them's going to New York, is it? And people are just super excited that the space shuttle, it's the ships.
Mm.
Because those ships went some, you know, went where no one has gone before. I mean, I hate to use the stupid, you know, cliche, yeah, but really, it's a big deal to people.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, in that case, I think it's, you know, that's unique to us, that it's like these five vessels are the, you know, are the only ones within recent memory that have gone out into space and come back, and we can go see them now. And that's not something that we do every day. By the time Starfleet exists, you know, there are starships all over the place. So what makes a ship so special?
Well, because you're out on the frontier and you're discovering new things. I mean, particularly Kirk's ship discovered all kinds of new stuff and weird, crazy stuff that I love in the novels, how there's this whole thing about how teams of people have to go back and clean up behind Kirk at every point. Not just clean up, that's the easy joke, but really, if you make an archaeological discovery and then you're gone the next week, there's a team of 50 people that then have to go and sift through that and figure out what it means. You know, like, each one of those things is important to tons and tons of people.
Right, but is it really then because the ship itself is so important, or just because the ship has been to these places that people revere it?
Well, I don't know. It's out on the frontier, and it's keeping these people alive. I don't know. I honestly don't know. Like I say, I can only look at the space shuttles and think people might still do that in the future. But man,
no, that's a good point.
I don't know. What do you think, Matt?
I agree.
All right then. He also says, also why I'm here. Why does it matter so much to us that the actors in the series get on? It doesn't affect the episodes. I mean, I'm the same, but it seems weird to me.
Get on? Is that some kind of
like get on
British slang for wanking?
Yes,
yes, it is. W-K. No, you know, I mean, we like it. We like to hear, like, the original series guys, like, did not get along so well.
No, it's nice to hear that the guys that we like each other.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and there is no good reason for it.
No.
I think it makes better chemistry. It makes, like, less tension on the set, and I think we can see that. Like, we've said before, there's so much good chemistry between these actors on Next Gen.
Mm-hmm.
There's particularly, like, when Troy, who, let's be honest, doesn't get a lot to do, has any kind of scene where she's got to have interpersonal chemistry and not be professional, but actually affable with Frakes or with Worf or with anybody. She carries it really well because you can tell these guys like each other.
Mm.
And that's acting to some extent, but some of it is just real affection, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if it's also kind of part of the TV or film, you know, Hollywood fantasy, that not only do people want to see things going well on screen, but they also, you know, they follow celebrities off screen. So it's kind of vicariously, they're like, oh, these people have a good work environment and they get along. Ah, I wish my life was like that.
That could be. I was reading recently, because they just did a 10th anniversary thing for Firefly, that those guys all got along so well that they were all personal friends. And between takes, they didn't go back to their trailers or the commissary or wherever it is people went. They would all congregate in the lounge area of the Firefly set and just hang out as friends between takes.
That is awesome.
And drink coffee or whatever, which is really great to hear. Again, it doesn't matter. I mean, that's
cool.
That show was fun either way.
Uh-huh.
But it's nice to hear that those guys, I don't know. I couldn't say why.
And yeah. I mean, finding out stuff like, finding out that Shatner was kind of an asshole to everyone else on the set back in the day, I mean, it didn't really taint the episodes, but it certainly tainted my opinion of him.
Well, and we definitely did a bit of projecting of that onto Kirk.
Oh, totally.
We started seeing him as a dick because we knew about Shatner.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that we'd necessarily perceive him the same way if we didn't know that.
I mean, you look at the crew of the Enterprise D. Say what you will, no one on that ship is an asshole.
No, and I've said this before. At any convention, if you have two of those guys, it doesn't matter which two,
mm-hmm.
but any pairing of those guys, they are going to be a blast.
Yep,
those guys all get along still, and they tell great stories. And if you have one of them up there, it's fine, and I'm sure it's interesting and fun, but two of them, you get so much great. Like, we saw Brent Spiner and Jonathan Frakes a couple of years ago.
Yep.
And that was just fantastic. And
hilarious.
You get that when you watch footage of, say, LeVar Burton and Marina Sirtis, or, you know,
Michael Dorn and Marina Sirtis.
Yeah, I bet that was great too.
It was.
Like, any pairing of those guys, because they all love each other, and mm-hmm. it's better for the fans in that regard, but it doesn't really make the show any better necessarily, unless, like I said, it's the chemistry thing. I don't know. But yeah, those guys obviously like each other, which I like.
Which makes me happy.
And also, I've heard that Patrick Stewart was a bit distant early on because he was the big, you know, big serious actor.
I'm a big actor.
And gradually, he just became more integrated with them, and they all, you know. They
don't look at me. I'm Captain Picard.
He wasn't like arrogant or anything, but he just like, I think he felt like he was a bit above them.
Avert your eyes.
Yes.
But it was too late. I'd seen everything.
Call me sir. God damn it. But no, it's just good to hear that they're all pals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's see. That's all the mail we have. There's been a couple of things, like a couple of quick little articles. I don't know. I've seen a few things here and there that they're trying to do a new series. The rumor we heard last was that they're trying to do an animated series. Could be. Mm-hmm. Don't know.
Which was talked about and would be awesome.
Yeah, it would be. And there's been movie rumors, of course.
Yeah, we pretty much stopped following the movie rumors.
There was one that I couldn't resist seeing, and I only mention this. For those of you avoiding spoilers, I don't know, skip ahead a minute or so, but this is not a spoiler.
Those of you ignoring spoilers who are on the podcast, sorry.
No. This is not a spoiler. It looks like one, but it's not. The rumor is that Benedict Cumberbatch is playing Gary Mitchell. Let me tell you why he's not. The IDW comic is supposed to be in continuity. It's actually supervised by one or more of the guys writing the scripts for the movies.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be leading into the movies. It's supposed to be in continuity. They've already retold Where No Man Has Gone Before. They've already killed off Gary Mitchell like they did in the episode.
Yeah.
Unless they're going to completely ignore what they just said.
Mm-hmm. Well, wait. Yeah, I read his interview, and he said that the other stuff, the comic books and all that, is in canon.
Right.
Unless it is trumped by a movie later.
Well, I think there's enough doubt there that we can say safely that it probably isn't a spoiler.
Well, I can flat out say one of the guys who wrote it in an interview pretty recently, I'm surprised you missed this, flat out said he's Benedict Cumberbatch is not playing Gary Mitchell.
Oh, well, good. I actually think I did read that, and he also said, but he is someone that's been in Star Trek before.
Yes.
Like, he is a character that we've seen somewhere before.
Yeah.
So, I will see. I also don't think that knowing who the villain is a spoiler at all.
No.
I think knowing what characters are in it, unless there's some kind of a surprise reveal, like, without spoiling anything, one of the big reveals near the end of the new Batman movie, knowing that would spoil something.
Yes.
But
she's my sister. My daughter. My sister. My daughter. My sister.
Snap out of it. Wait, that's a different movie entirely. But no, I mean, knowing what characters are in it, that's not going to ruin anything, really.
No.
But, you know, we'll see what happens. I'm very curious. I am very impatient.
Yes.
But yeah. I trust that they know what they're doing.
But I mean, you know, they're filming it now, so.
They are. It's happening. I can see. It's coming. It's going to be here.
Krusty is coming. Krusty is coming.
I've seen pictures from the set. I know it's going to happen.
So, I saw it happen.
It did happen. I saw it happen. It has happened.
I wish he was the villain in Star Trek 2.
No, you don't. Do you?
I fucking love that guy.
Really? You love Nero?
Yeah.
I didn't.
He's ridiculous.
I love that
movie.
Man,
I'm going to have to watch that again now.
Yeah, me too. No, I didn't love him, but I love that movie, so it doesn't really matter.
Yep.
I have that theory, that meta theory, that he's written to represent all the crap that the Next Gen movies became. Terrible pointy ship, terrible stupid Romulans.
You're not wrong.
And then he got there and they wiped the slate clean and started over.
Like, it literally looks like Star Trek Nemesis is attacking.
Exactly. And they're like, oh no, we need to get rid of this and start over with the shiny, colorful stuff.
Yep.
And I like to think there's like this extra layer of meta there where they actually did that. Yep. But that's just my read. I don't know.
I like that read.
Yeah.
I like the cut of your jib.
That before, but that's not bad.
Do you like the, no, I don't know.
What else do you like about me?
Yeah. Do you like the slice of my gib? No, I don't know where I was going with that.
I'm not sure what a slice is.
I don't know. All right. So that is all for us, Bob. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We pick up season 4 next week with the conclusion of Best of Both Worlds, and then the ramifications of that where Picard goes home and cries in a vineyard. Spoilers, I guess. that is the only episode that doesn't take, that has no scenes on the bridge, which always sticks out of my head. It's very cool.
And it's very weird.
Yeah. So we'll pick that up next week. And Matt, I know you're getting tired of your catchphrase, but we can't stop until you say it.
Say it!
See you, folks.
Thank you.
The Post-Atomic Horror Podcast is a co-production of Ron Algar Watt and Matt Robotham, copyright 2012. Please don't sue us. We're just doing this for fun.